friends. It's me, Duncan, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Got to start off by thanking all of you who reached out to me after the last depression rant. I really appreciate the love that you've been sending me. I can't imagine that I deserve such a thing. And it's weird, right? Talking about this stuff. It's very weird, you know, because there's like a version of yourself that you want to be. And then there's the version of yourself that you are. And the version of yourself that you want to be is ridiculous. For me, it's like a cross between, I don't know, Wolverine, Johnny Cash, Bill Hicks, George Carlin. Sort of like this muscular, like, I don't know, outlaw, lunatic being. Like, also, let's throw in, like, I don't know, Buddha or something. I mean, it's ridiculous what your ego wants you to be. And that's the cross that your ego crucifies you on. And you're just hanging up there, hanging on this cross made of all the ridiculous ideas that some childish part of you wants you to be, when the reality is I'm a 42-year-old dude with a receding hairline. I'm not Wolverine. I'm not going to have adamantium claws that shoot out of my skin. But because my ego wants me to be this incredibly tough, ridiculous comic book character, it's insane, literally. I feel weird saying anything that makes me feel vulnerable. And that's the kind of dystopian reality that we're currently existing in, my sweet brothers and sisters. It's not George Orwell's 1984. At least in that 1984, you know you can't talk about the state. You know you can't rebel in any way, shape, or form. Or they'll drag you to a reconditioning facility and maybe kill you. But in this particular reality that we exist in, we've created our own Orwellian police states by imprisoning ourselves into our own tyrannical dystopian reality tunnels, where we've created ridiculous rules. We've constructed ridiculous rules of self-expression. And for a lot of us, coming out of the depression closet and admitting that we've been taking long naps and haven't been exercising and have just felt like shit for a long time is equivalent to walking out in the middle of some courtyard in North Korea and bugling out that you think Kim Jong-il is a fat piece of shit. The guards inside your dystopian reality will run at you with their muskets and get you right back down into your fucking depression bed. Don't tell anybody. What, do you just want attention? You're weak, you weak, mewling little shit. So, it felt good to say it. And I'm so grateful to all of you for all the little bits of advice that you gave me, all the tidbits of wisdom, sharing with me your own personal struggles with depression, all of it. It just was a wave of love. And I feel so much better. So much better. And there's other things that I've done. Some of them I can talk about. For example, taking cold showers, hanging out with friends, taking care of shit I needed to take care of that I was putting off or didn't want to admit I needed to do. And then there's some things that I can't talk about because we actually do in some way live in a dystopian reality. So in that way that I can't talk about it, I'm going to have to tell you a story about a person who lived in a crazy world. This is a science fiction story that I read somewhere, and I can't remember what book it was, but here's the story. Once upon a time, there was a planet, a beautiful planet, a big blue-green planet that floated in the middle of a beautiful, beautiful universe. And this universe was filled with other planets. Again, science fiction. But so far, it's science fact, baby, because there are planets. But in this science fiction story, as I recall, there was this particular planet, a beautiful blue-green planet. And this beautiful blue-green planet was encased by a kind of invisible superintelligence that most people didn't see. Now, in the science fiction story, there was a time period on this planet where everybody could see this superintelligence, and everybody had access to it using certain sacramental tools. Mushrooms, different brews, different potions, and you would imbibe these potions, and then suddenly you would make a direct contact with the living spirit that enclosed this planet in the science fiction story. And that living spirit was so powerful that every time you made contact with this living spirit, it would fill your heart with love, and it would show you your true identity. And that true identity that it would show you was, in fact, that you were the living spirit itself, and that you had temporarily taken the form of this being living on this planet in this science fiction story as a form of entertainment. And that realization was a kind of healing realization that people in the science fiction story achieved through the use of these sacraments. And that healing was healing because it reminded you, them in the story, of what they really were. And what they really were was love. So in the science fiction story, as it turns out, a meteor hit that planet, and people forgot how to connect with that super intelligent spirit that floated around the planet. A lot of people forgot about it, and civilization was rebuilt. And over the course of thousands and thousands of years, governments formed, and it became a dystopian reality where the very sacramental substances that people needed to connect with this beautiful, super intelligent spirit that cloaked this planet became illegal in this dystopian science fiction story. And that the people who used these beautiful sacraments and experienced any kind of healing or joy were generally labeled as freaks, as criminals, and they were thrown into dungeons. It was a really, really sad story. Really sad story. Because these tools in the science fiction story, mushrooms, for example, or this chemical called LSB, were mostly harmless when used responsibly. And in the science fiction story, there was a character who got this mind disease, a kind of plague that many, many people on this planet had gotten. And the plague was a direct result of not making contact with this living spirit. And it was kind of like the same thing that happens when you don't have enough vitamins on this planet, you know, you kind of shrivel up. You start feeling bad and woozy, and you just don't have enough energy. Well, in this science fiction story, contact with that living spirit through sacramental substances was identical to drinking water or breathing or eating. And if you didn't make contact with that energy, then you could actually get you would get this mind plague that in the science fiction story they called lepression. And so in the science fiction story, one of the characters ended up finding this incredible sacrament and ingesting it and making contact with this incredible living spirit and was instantaneously reminded of how beautiful life was and how important and incredible it was to let go of the construct of the ego and step out of the crystallized prison of your habitual thought patterns and concepts and to re-recognize just how beautiful color itself was and how amazing inhaling oxygen and exhaling carbon dioxide was. Just the very experience of being alive in this science fiction story, this character discovered as the mind plague that had afflicted him from going into an amnesic egoic state of self-obsession and selfishness lifted. And the lifting of that state, even temporarily, thanks to the sacramental substance that in this science fiction story was somehow condemned by the emperor who ran the planet, was enough to create an almost complete remission of this awful mind disease that in the science fiction story was called lepression. So it's a cool science fiction story. I'll try to remember what it was. But great story. And I think we can learn a lot from science fiction because sometimes science fiction is actually exactly the truth. You get what I'm saying, babies. Hey, listen, sorry for being so esoteric. We've got a fantastic podcast for you. I could go on and on and on and on talking about depression, my personal struggles with depression, the strangeness of the world we live in, that we can't talk about it when we get depressed or have some mental illness. And in fact, I did. I have another intro that I just recorded that's an hour long. Nothing, just no guest. Maybe I'll release that one day. But for now, I want to put up this episode with beautiful Mike Kaplan. This is part two in the ayahuasca series that I just decided was an ayahuasca series. Mike's spiritual path is partially the path of ayahuasca. And man, this is a really cool one. Because in this one, as opposed to Adam Strauss's story of terror and adventure, we're going to get this like the light version of ayahuasca, the amazing light version of ayahuasca. And Mike guides us through at one point in this discussion what it's like for the first 10 or 15 minutes of an ayahuasca trip. And he does the most amazingly detailed job. It's incredible. I felt like I was experiencing this substance, which as of yet I have not experienced, just from this description. So stay tuned and get into a place where you can kind of relax and close your eyes and be prepared for a simulated ayahuasca experience. It's all in this podcast. We're going to jump right into it. But first, some very quick business. Begin to open up those heart chakras and send as much love as possible as you can to this brilliant comedian, Mike Kaplan, who actually just released a wonderful album. Let me look it up right now. One second here. This is clumsy. Let's do the om for a second. Oh. Oh. You can go to MikeKaplan.com. That's MYQKaplan.com. You can check out his album, No Kidding, which is available on iTunes. You can see his Letterman set. You can dance in the glorious energy of this beautiful being who was so kind as to come on the podcast and talk to me for an hour. So everybody now, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, Mike Kaplan. Welcome back. Last time I saw you were in Los Angeles with me.
That's right.
And now I'm in your hometown.
With me.
Your roaming grounds.
Yes.
Park Slope.
Yeah, that is so. Welcome.
Thank you so much, man. I got to tell you, so we know each other. I guess we're friends. We've never hung out more than in like at a club once. But you... Something happens, and I'll delete this if it's something you don't want me to say. But
no, sure.
When you're about to take ayahuasca, sometimes you'll text me.
Yes.
And what's really weird about it is sometimes when that happens, I will be thinking about you. Mm-hmm. And that particularly happened this last time that you texted me. It was really odd because why am I even thinking about you? I mean, no, not that I... There's of the array of people that I know,
yes,
who I spend more time hanging out with, why would suddenly you pop into my head at a in-between shows somewhere?
A fair question.
And then suddenly you text me. What did you say? Do you remember what you said?
I could look it up, but it was probably something like about to become the universe.
Yes!
Yeah.
But it was really weird because you texted me that, like, I guess you could measure, it was like 4 milliseconds after I thought about you, mainly because I needed to write you back because I wanted you to do this podcast.
Yes.
Shit, I've got to tell Mike. I keep forgetting to tell him I want to do the podcast. And then, I'm about to become the universe. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I mean, it is that you... I also already was the universe, and you were as well. So, you know, there's parts of it that, if we go deep down enough into ourselves, we reach the innermost nothingness, everythingness that is the shared existence between us. So perhaps, in some way, time and space connected even before, at the bottom and at the top, like two highways that you're like, oh, where do these intersect? It's at two places now.
That is so weird. And not weird at all, but we like to think of it as weird, because if it wasn't weird, it wouldn't be interesting at all. But there's something fun about not admitting that that's how everything works.
Oh, yeah. I also like that, like, you're a person who, yes, we don't classically know each other. Well, like, I don't know necessarily, like, about your childhood and, you know, the ways that you even spend every day of your life.
That's
like,
right.
We are people who, like, when we intersect, you know, there is this, you know, vast overlap of connection. Because I think, you know, we have brains that are occupied by similar thought processes, like some, you know, you have your things, I have my things, and there's a lot of overlap. The Venn diagram between us is a, you know, a joyful and connected one. But
we're in the psychedelic community together.
Yeah, certainly. In the you taught me the word, either satsang or sangha.
Yes.
Both, which are, I think you used one and then you used the other, and they both are applicable as far as I understand it.
That's it. Yeah. We, and so existing in that place, you do save a lot of time right away when you know someone's there. You're like, okay, I bet there's certain things we've experienced together. I bet when you meet somebody who has, I don't know, ascended K2 and you meet them, you're like, oh, we've ascended. I know what you went through there, man. And if you know someone who is, on the psychedelic path, is a spiritual path, then you know, like, oh, you've been through some rough times, haven't you?
There's a shared, like, linguistic vocabulary as well as an experiential vocabulary. You know, the lexicon of our actions has, you know, we've taken some of the same steps, at least in parallel, along different ways towards, you know, the same thing and from the same place. So, like, I like that. I mean, you're also a guy who, you know, if I wasn't here, you could talk for an hour by yourself, and if you weren't here, I could talk for an hour
right.
by myself. Like, so, you know, sometimes when I do a podcast with a person, I'm like, oh, I wonder what I'm going to ask this person, like, or I should have, like, some questions in mind. But, you know, going into a conversation with you, I'm never like, here are the beats that I need to hit, or here are the things that I hope to talk about. Otherwise, like, what are we going to talk about? I like that the very first thing that you said was, I got to tell you this. Like, there's just already just a foundation, a baseline. I must, which is sort of a thing that I've been thinking about recently, when thinking about things that one has to do, like, I have to do this, you know, things that you're like, I wish I didn't have to, but I do have to. But so many of those things now, I try to convert, sort of, you know, alchemize the concept of them into, I get to do them, you know, like,
right.
Which is still,
that's
like,
cool.
When thinking about, like, oh, I get to do my taxes, you know, it's at least, obviously, you still have to do your taxes, but at least framing it that way, especially because, you know, you made money, you get to make money, you get to have life,
right.
And so as part of getting to make money, you get the fraction of that experience, which is having to do your taxes.
That's a really smart thing. It's so easy to get caught up in the trap of have versus get.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you were sort of imprisoned in any prison at all,
mm-hmm.
and you got to spend a day not being in that prison, and even if that day was spent in some room doing taxes, depending on how rotten the prison was,
sure.
It's still going to be preferable. People will be signing up for that. There would be waiting lists
of
people in solitary confinement, for example, going, yes, a day doing taxes, yes, please, I'll do anything, please, please.
And life itself, you know, some could view as its own prison, our bodies, various prisons, you know, decaying, falling apart, you know, as we move forward through time, like towards both the escape from the prison, but also the destruction of the prison. But, you know, ideally, eventually we were free of it and we will be free of it. So the prison is only the smallest part of it. And then the prison can also be filled with these joyous tax days.
That's right. And well, this is a funny thing to talk. I was just listening to this again. I like to listen to it. I have a few safety parachutes if I eat too much marijuana and start freaking out.
Okay.
And one of the safety parachutes I have is this audiobook by Ram Dass, Experiments in Truth.
Okay.
So if I'm really like, oh shit, man, for whatever reason, this is not going well with my neurology today.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know if you're a... Do you take marijuana much?
Not much. I have a tincture that I bought, like, some months ago that I still have, like, a lot. Like, I paid $50, like, months and months ago.
It'll last forever.
It lasts for so long. And I don't do it that much. But, like, the last time I took even just, like, a half a dropper of it, which is more than I need, like, it like, made my body, like, shake and vibrate as I was, like, going to sleep. And I was like, oh, this is not, like, what I would wish to happen.
This is not the stoner relaxation shit you see. Oh, dude, I just needed to lay down and do cheat. It's like, no, you're for me, it's like bursts of light as I close my eyes, and that same shaking, that feeling of your... Now, I don't know what that is exactly, but it's certainly, you know, with edible marijuana, it can go south, which is actually not going south. Probably like with any plant medicine.
Yes.
What we think of as going south is quite often it being like, well, okay.
This is what you've done and what is, you know, required or needed or, you know, this is what's happening. So
we're going to work on you.
You get to have it.
You get to have a little mini operation today because I guess that's what you wanted because you ate me. Let's do this.
And I like the idea of I'd never heard the phrase safety parachute. Is that, did you come up with that, or is that in the vernacular of the community?
I'm sure it's been used before, but that's something I've just thought of. I don't know, but
of course.
I'm sure people. But one of my safety parachutes is I have two safety parachutes. One safety parachute, classic cleaning.
Oh, okay.
So if I'm freaking out, then like organizing my environment to try to imitate, I think, what the plant is trying to do inside, which is like, look, you've left this unacknowledged chunk of anger laying in the living room of your heart for the last several months. You're just going to let it sit there? Let's put it away, man. Clean out the cat. Look at all this fucking, these like little turds of selfishness. Oh, look, do you see how your selfishness is violence? Do you see that? And then like you... So as I'm cleaning,
you're cleaning the external world to mimic what you want to happen in the internal world.
Yeah. And I was just listening to Ram Dass's Experiments in Truth. So to talk more about this idea of the body as the prison, he was relating the story of this Zen master who was dying, not a Zen master. Actually, it was, Christ. I think it was like Ramakrishna, some kind of Hindu guru dying. And, had cancer or something, and his devotees are like, can't you stop it?
Magic it away.
Yeah. And he said, this is body's used up. Like, we're done with this. This is done.
Yeah.
And so he's laying there and he's dying, and his devotees are weeping, and one of them says, what are we going to do when you're gone? And he looks at him like, and he says, where would I go? Yeah. And it's that idea of like, oh, because yeah, right. If you think I'm in here,
yeah,
in here, then yeah, if this is P.S., that's all you see. It's like, really? You just see me as my body? That's like when you're around a woman and you're just staring at her tits.
Hey, my brain's in here. Hey, my consciousness is out everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, don't look at the eyes or my tits or like, I'm not my... That's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
The eyes are the window to the soul, but like the body is also like the everything. The everything is the everything to the everything.
The body is the boobs of the universe, and everyone's just fixated. Just like, whoa, look at that body. It's going away. Oh,
that's great. Yeah. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do when I'm gone? You're gonna realize that I'm not gone and never was, and neither are you, and nobody is. So,
yeah.
So hopefully, I mean, you can learn that before I'm gone.
And it's yes, yeah, and by P.S., that's the whole thing. I guess you just never listened to anything I ever said. You were just fixated on me.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So no fear and body, no. Okay, but also, oh my God, you're gonna die.
I'll tell you one of the funniest things. Ram Dass is my teacher, and so like, and I go to these retreats, and I have like little interactions with him and flashbulb moments. And one of the things he does is he goes out in the ocean at the end of the retreat, which is pretty incredible. He's had a stroke; they push him out in a floating thing, wow, like a little wheelchair. And this water is sometimes cold. Like, I won't go out in the morning. I'm not going to go out at like 7 a.m.
Sure.
Because what? I don't want to be uncomfortable. And yet here's this, I think he's 80 by now. I don't know how old he is, 70, 80?
Oh, yeah, at least 80, maybe 90. I mean, somewhere in there.
And it's 7 a.m. and he's floating in the water with like the biggest grin on his face. And it's like, oh, man, what? Anyway, at one point, and because, you know, something that does bother me with him a lot is like, I know that he's got to die. Like, this is the...
His body will go.
His body's going to go. And it's up, and for many of us, this is very sad. We don't want that to happen. And so, and I guess that's something that bothers me. So I'm floating out there with him. A bunch of people are floating around. It's very fun, very blissful, very cool. And he like goes under the water. And it's a pretty, he like goes intentionally, like is leaning back in this thing and goes under the water. And everyone's like floating there and he's under the water. And like more time passes than you would want to pass with anyone under the water.
Sure.
He's holding his breath
uh-huh.
and doing the classic thing, you know, that a kid does in a swimming pool.
Oh, yeah.
Let me make my parents think I've drowned. Let them trickle. But except this is not a kid.
No.
This is a person who has had a stroke. He's in a wheelchair.
He's elderly. Yes.
Elderly. And he's under the water in Hawaii,
yeah.
you know, under the ocean water. And I'm like, enough time goes by. And that's when it's like all this stuff starts coming. Like, fuck, what if he dies? What if he dies? I don't want this person. This is a teacher. I don't. And then as these thoughts are coming in my head, he comes out of the water and he's got he has his mouth open, his tongue out and this fake like demonic thing. And he goes, and it was like, oh, wow, that's the coolest thing ever. And then he's laughing because it's like, oh, yeah, you are like reflecting everyone's fear of what's going to happen to you and then responding in the most hilarious way. Like, it's just in your head, man.
That's wonderful. And it reminds me of, I have three things, I think, but
cool.
I'm sure at least, you know, I'll get to, I won't, there's infinite things, but I'll try to go at least one at a time. One, you're like the disciple in the story. You're the devotee who you're like, what are we going to, like, I'm afraid when you're gone. Like,
yeah.
He's the one telling you the story about the guy who's like, where would I go?
Yeah.
And you're like, but I am still scared.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and of course, like when, you know, he's here as like all the people that we know that have died. Like, you know, I would say when Mitch Hedberg died, you know, you're like, oh, we're not going to get more Mitch Hedberg
That's
wonderful
right.
things. And
right.
we just have to remember the ones that exist and be glad that he was and
yeah.
that he did share what he did. And, you know, Ram Dass has left behind like a legacy or will have left behind, you know, massive amounts of talks, recordings,
yeah.
books, writings, teachings,
yeah.
ideas, inspiring. Like, and, you know, he will be in you. He is in you
yeah.
through that, and you like you'll be sharing all the things and having new things,
right?
And like you'll teach people. And I liked the idea. What was the other thing that I wanted? Oh, one of the things from before, I really liked that you just called it like the living room of the heart. That was just. Do you know why the living room is called the living room?
No.
There used to be, back before like funeral parlors existed, the parlor of the house. That was what the living room used to be called. It used to be called the parlor. And that was where they would do wakes. You know, if a body died, they would actually wait for it to wake up there. That was literally because they didn't have great medicine.
Wow.
So they'd have a dead body, maybe, hopefully not, but it would be dead in the house for however long, a day, several days. And so that's where they did the, and they, eventually they were like, let's outsource this. Let's have funeral parlors instead of the parlor in the house. And so when they stopped having dead bodies in the room in the house, they were like, let's not call it the parlor anymore. Let's get away from death in this room. So that's why they called it the living room.
Holy shit. That's crazy. Of course.
Yeah.
I've never even asked myself, why is this called the living room?
Like, I mean, we live in every room of the house, but that was the one where they used to have the dead and dying room.
Wow. God. You know, that our relationship with death now is so fascinating, isn't it? Because
yeah.
we just don't, just the idea of that at all, the idea of like when someone dies, putting them in the house.
Oh, yeah.
For days.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be everything was, our relationship with everything was different. Like, you know, people used to have sex with their children in the room, in the bed, just because they only had one room. So all the family was in that place. So like sex happened with everyone there. Death happened with everyone there. Like everything happened in a limited space. It's only now that we're like, we should have different rooms and houses and, you know, have all these boundaries and borders. And we're like, well, that's normal now. So now we think it'd be weird to, you know, have sex in front of your kids or have a dead body in your house. But, you know, it's all context.
You never forget the first time you heard your parents having sex.
I don't know if I ever have.
You've never heard it?
No, and they're divorced, so I don't know if they're gonna.
God, I remember coming home, and like just the sound was so like, I think about it all the time because I think they were having like middle-aged like, who sings like, once upon a time I was falling in love,
oh.
now I'm only falling.
I love that. Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Yeah.
I don't remember who does that.
But they were having that kind of, like the kind of sex you could only have during the divorce boom, you know? Like,
sure.
I don't think people have sex like that anymore. That maybe they do, but it within the pleasure there's a kind of like unbelievable like mournfulness, or maybe I'm just was reading into it, but it was just because we're talking about like 6 seconds before like I ran into my bedroom and like shut the door and put on.
How old were you at this time?
God, I was in high school.
So yeah, you had a brain that like knew what was going on. Did your parents eventually get divorced, or?
Yes, and this was actually I was hearing my last stepdad, and he did turn out to be gay.
Mm.
So perhaps I was hearing the
wow,
the howling of a gay man,
the inner closeted.
No, I'm not doing.
Wow. Well, he's out now, or
yeah,
that's great.
He's out, mm-hmm. And like you know, I haven't talked to him in a long time, but I know he. Yeah, he's out. I went and visited him and his boyfriend once in their house. I can't remember if he was happy or not. Well, happy isn't a gauge of anything.
Of course.
But
I can't remember if he was this one characteristic and one quality forever homogeneously.
Yeah, right.
Probably not, but who knows, maybe.
Who knows? Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, people used to really like I don't know. Do you? May I ask how old you are?
I'm 38.
Do you feel like you're 30? Like,
I saw. Do you read Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal? The web comic. It's wonderful. You would really like.
Yeah,
it.
I've seen. I think it pops up on Twitter sometimes. Yeah. Or on Reddit.
There was a cartoon sometime in the past few years where it was like a picture of like a little girl, and then the next panel was a little girl inside of like a slightly older, like an older girl, and then an adult girl with all of those like little girl versions inside, and then as the person kept getting older and older, eventually it was like this old woman with like a little girl at the core, and like every person. So the idea being, I forget like what, and there was probably something funny, a caption, but just the message of like, whatever age you are, you know, you feel like yourself. You're not like, now I'm fine. You know, whenever people are like, oh, you're a year older now. How does it feel? I mean, it feels the same as it did 1 minute ago and a minute ago then.
Right. And that's the Ottman, as they call it. And my grandmother, when she was 90, she said this very thing to me. She said, I look in the mirror, I feel like I'm 12 years old.
Yeah.
This is the Ottman, as they call it, the eternal, undying, never born self.
That makes sense.
And that thing I feel inside of me, and I think, God, I'm like, not only am I like, I'm 42, and I'm like, I think I would be too, like, when my mom was well into her second marriage,
sure,
I'm pretty sure that guy who I looked up to as a kid was like younger than you.
Oh yeah, the age thing. Like, here's the ways that you can see how weird it is. Like, remember when I was a kid and I watched The Goonies. And like those kids were like older than me when I watched it,
yeah,
or at least my age maybe. And then like when I watched it like 10, 20 years later, I'm like, those are little kids. They like look, they must look exactly the same as when I looked at them before, but before they were big and now they're small. Or like a girl that I went to nursery school with, preschool, like I didn't see her from when we were like 5 until we were like 30. And I'm like, oh, you look like the same, but that's actually impossible. You don't look like the 5-year-old, but my 5-year-old eyes looking at her 5-year-old self was exactly equivalent to like my 30-year-old eyes looking at her 30-year-old self. And like, I remember like I read Archie comics when I was a kid. And like, so I still have a sense that like Archie is older than me, because when I started reading them, he was like 12 years older than me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, me too. Me too. Holy shit. That's weird.
And I'm like, yeah, that art, man, when am I going to be as old as Archie?
Whoa. That's so weird. We keep that in our minds. They're eternally older than us, even though we've exceeded their age by decades.
Absolutely. And I mean, also it's strange because Archie is also in some ways like 50, 60, 70 years old as well. Like, he is also the eternal Atman teenager. Like,
yeah,
he literally never becomes older other than in the versions of the story where they do actually age him, have him get married and die, turn into a zombie and that sort of thing.
Wow. Wait, there's one where he turns into a zombie.
Yeah. They do a lot of weird stuff in Archie these days. There's a whole like Archie zombie world.
What?
Yeah, they do like a bunch of like alternate realities, like one where
is it violent?
There's like, yeah, people, it's sort of like they're like, I guess they're like, The Walking Dead is a thing that people like buying, so we'll do The Walking Dead, but Archie. And so, yeah, there's like people like eat everybody, they turn into zombies, they eat people. It's kind of like, you know, a horror Archie comic.
Alexa, order Zombie Archie.
That's fun.
Wow. You know, this is the this is something I've been playing around with a bunch. Is this idea of like, can we?
Alexa's in the other room.
I didn't realize that would work. She actually just started talking. The question is, okay, so you saw your friend, and you saw her still young.
Yes.
And so you were seeing into her, mm-hmm. something more eternal or something like that.
That sounds right, yeah.
And this is something I wonder, and because you hear about this Neem Karoli Baba, this guru, they say that he would look at you and he would see through you. Mm. And it wasn't that he would see through you and be like, God, you're a fucking asshole. You know, like, oh, like, yeah. As many business people might, you know, like the very sour people in the world are, sure. like, I could see someone and know who they are right away. But it's always like, no, everyone you see, you know, they're an asshole right away. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I just read a thing, a quote a friend put on. I don't know who this quote is, but it was somebody, you know, some wise Eastern person, I think, who said a thing. It was like a poem about beauty. And then the message was, if you look at me and see beauty in me, it's not that there's beauty in me. It's that there's so much beauty in you that you can't help but see beauty everywhere that you look. Like,
yeah.
Your eyes are like beauty filters because you are beauty. And so you're like, oh, that's beautiful. And that's beautiful. And that's beautiful. So if you're an asshole, then you also have like asshole goggles. You're just like, oh, that guy's an ass. And like, and everybody's right. Everybody's treating me like an asshole. So it must be that everyone is an asshole.
And I'm never wrong. I'm never wrong.
I like that. I can tell exactly what people are like. Well, I can tell like what you were like from the first sentence that you just said.
I can tell you're pretty miserable.
Yeah.
You know, because you're sad. But and because people like that are miserable. But the idea is like, all right, well, so there's that one version, yes. which I like, and I've heard a bunch, and I like the projector.
Yeah.
Universe screen, mind projector, shadows that we see are our own obstructions. Light that we see is our own light. And then there's another idea, maybe they're both the same idea, but which is like, okay, you look at a person and you're seeing a gobstopper, mm-hmm. right? No one there, I have never heard, and I'm sure it's happened because there's a lot of psychos out there, but I've never heard of anybody looking at a baby and being like, that's an evil being. Look at that evil baby. See what that baby, oh fuck, look at that, the way that baby is trying to roll over. That's an evil way to try to roll over. No one says that. So, and why? And then you look at a baby and you're like, man, this is a little light. I don't know it's like a lantern or something.
Oh, sure.
And they glow. So this glowing little thing. And, you know, your mind will be like, well, the other day there was a baby in a restaurant and I was looking, I'm like, God, that's like brand new skin. Like that's just like fresh to the universe skin. And it's like, look at that healthy skin. But then I was looking, I'm like, no, it's like there's a light coming out of that being. Like it's glowing.
Sure. Sort.
So anyway, a person, gobstopper, is a gobstopper. And that light starts getting surrounded by layer upon layer of personality.
Sure.
Ego identity mechanisms or whatever, right? So the light begins to like, so the, you know, actually, I've been thinking about buying one of those cool Moroccan hanging lanterns.
Oh,
you know
sure.
what I'm talking about?
I think so, yeah.
They're cool because like they have these like lattices on them with patterns that the light shines through and casts this really cool geometric pattern on the wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's great.
And so a person with a very well-developed identity
is like that.
Yeah, they're letting the light out, but the light is being cast through this like lattice of like, you know, whatever. Like you meet somebody who's whenever you run into like a famous person and you're like, you know what? I see why you're famous.
Oh, sure.
You're like incredibly magnetic. You're, I don't know what the fuck it is about you, but you sure make me want to please you somehow.
You make sense, Tom Hanks. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people, like, have the layers, like, block the light, like, just fold it, and they, you know, out of protection, out of insecurity, out of fear, out of, you know, out of pain and hurt, out of things that have been, you know, done to them or just done near them and around them. So that I like the idea that, I don't know if we talked about, like, I use the Headspace app to meditate. And
oh my god, I've been thinking about you. Are you talking about the thing that detects your EKG readings in your?
I am not, but I do like. I have done some other things recently that we can talk about.
EEG,
that are
right. Okay. Headspace. Tell
Headspace
me.
Is just you know, it's an app for meditation that I use in the morning, and one of the visualizations that they recommend to picture, like the idea of the place that you're, you know, quote unquote, trying to get to, which isn't the way to say it. Like, but the one goal is to just view yourself as like a blue sky, just a clear blue sky, and that it's inside of you. It's not somewhere that you have to get that's outside of yourself. It's not something that's unattainable. It's something that's actually present all along. Like you're talking about, like the light that exists in you as a baby before, like the layers start blocking it, like before clouds of thoughts and emotions and experiences start clouding, literally, you know, in some ways or figuratively clouding the experience of your mind. If your mind is this, you know, still pond or blue sky, and like, you know, to just let those clouds part, like, as or as they float across, be like, oh, there's that one, but not like grabbing them and holding on to them, identifying with them, being like, I am this thought, like, I am this experience, I am sad, I am anxious, be like, oh, there goes sadness, there goes anxiety, letting it float away so that you can get in touch with, you know, the actual, just the sky, the clear blue open sky that you are, and to try to do that as often as possible so that when you walk through life, people are like, you're like Tom Hanks.
or people don't even notice you.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that happens, is like, because not like you can artistically develop a personality that's shining the light through in the way of like a talented being or whatever, a charismatic being or whatever, and have all the different like tricks up your sleeve of a developed manipulator. Those people are like hilarious to me, because when you, it's easy to get caught in their orbit, and you notice as you're getting pulled into their orbit that everyone, there's a whole like a planetary system in their orbit.
Sure.
And it's like, it's a fascinating thing, because that's what they've developed, the ability to like draw energy to them. And, but then there's people that aren't even there, you know, where it's just light. Mm-hmm. And those are the, you know, I don't know if this happens rarely to me because I'm so fucking self-absorbed, god damn it. But every once in a while you realize like, wait a minute. That person there, they sure are quiet, you know? And then you look at them and you're like, they're sure sweet. And then you think, I think that person would do just about anything for me or for anybody. And then you're like, wait, that person's always doing stuff for other people and never talks about it. But they're just like not even there, but they're always doing stuff to help. But they're not there, and they don't care that you know or don't know that they are doing stuff to help. And if you mention that they're doing stuff to help, they wouldn't even, they'd just be like, maybe, yeah, like, they'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And that's interesting to me, because those are the very, in Taoism, you know, they talk about, you know, because there's like, you and I, we're entertainers. We do comedy. We develop a lattice work that hopefully shines the light in a way that produces a reaction that we like. And that's what we do. And it's okay. That's what our karma is. This is what we do, right? But and so like we beat our chests or our drums or whatever, and we have developed ways of doing it.
Our chest drums surrounding our living room hearts.
Yeah, that's right. And it's cool, it's fun, and we enjoy it, and hopefully people like that too. So that's cool. But man, it's really a fascinating thing that in like the Tao Te Ching, they always talk about the sage.
I just read I don't know if you know that, I don't know the name of the author, but there's like a very famous Asian cartoonist who has like written like in Asia, like best-selling versions of like, I just read this sort of illustrated version, this cartoon of the Tao Te Ching.
Cool.
That I'll bring it next time I come over. And yeah, and it talks, I'm like reading it and it's like the sage, you know, purposefully like appears foolish and like, you know, the strong appears weak and like weakness is stronger than strength. And I'm like, oh, I just read this book about how to look smart. And it's, oh, don't tell people that you read a book. You know, like it's, I'm like, oh, I don't understand any of this. Great. Okay. Am I wise now? Like, yeah. am I doing it? am I a sage yet?
Yeah. Yes. That is exactly what the effect has on you, because the thing negates it. It's all about negation of itself. So the way that can be named is not the true name.
Emptiness is like nothingness is more powerful than somethingness. Like I like the example they gave of like, imagine like a cup. Like a cup can only be filled with tea if it's hollow and empty. If the cup was all something, then you couldn't use it. It would have no function. It requires more nothingness than something. Like it just needs the thin layer of something surrounding the nothingness that makes it usable as a, you know, you can drink tea out of it.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. And that
and make the self like that too. Have the self be so empty as to be able to be constantly filled with, you know, life experience of helping people, of being like that person that you're like, hey, you're always like, you're like an empty cup. It's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's it.
Yeah.
These people are interesting because I have a feeling they're like, they're everywhere. They're like birds.
I mean, you literally can't know because it's like whenever, you know, I'm vegan and the joke that people make a lot is like, oh, you always have to tell people that you're vegan, don't you? And like, I didn't have to, like, it's coming up now for a specific reason that there are like so many vegans throughout the country, throughout the city, the world, wherever, who aren't telling people at all. They're just literally living their lives, doing the thing that they think is the right thing to do, living, you know, kindly and caringly, and, you know, maybe sharing it with people if they ask, or being like, hey, I noticed that you're not ordering meat. Oh, yeah, I don't do that. And
yeah,
like, but the only people that you see and hear are the loud ones. Like, you only know when people are, like, sticking out because that's what you notice. You don't notice just, like, the baseline of everybody else that you never come across.
Yeah, you don't notice. And that is interesting because those people are you know, they talk, it's like everyone talks about like, or dreams of the secret society or the mystery school. Mm-hmm. Is that, so the opposite of the Illuminati, I guess, is the mystery schools.
I've never heard of the mystery school. Well, it's been so far a mystery to me. Tell me.
Well, let me illuminate you with something I know nothing about.
Sure.
Or something only I've picked up here and there. But I think my mom was really interested in this idea. But concept is that if you look at the pattern of the prophets, messiahs, mythological figures, real or false, the pattern is always the same. Being goes off somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Being comes back a different person.
Sure.
Where did the person go? The person goes to a place and receives some revelation. You know, Moses goes up on the mountaintop and receives these tablets. He's gone long enough that, you know, the people build a golden calf or whatever. So he's gone for some time.
Yes.
He's not gone for a short amount of time. Whatever it is, it's like, I don't know how long it takes to build an idol, but in my vision of this idol, it's a big, huge, beautiful golden thing. And
they didn't have an automated factory to make these idols.
Of course, we're looking at the literal. It's not a real idol. You know, of course, they just got confused about the like reality versus like fake news, probably. So Jesus, same thing. What was he doing before, you know?
There's a lot of unaccounted time.
Unaccounted time. Siddhartha Gautama goes off into the forest, studies. We know that he studied with the ascetics, but who are these ascetics? Who was he talking to? Who was he really hanging out with? Who are these precursor people that made a Buddha a Buddha, a Jesus a Jesus?
So it was all this religious Hogwarts, this mystery
school.
That's
the idea, is that these mystery schools function inside of society, that there are members of these mystery schools that have been inducted into them because of like demonstrations of it's the archetype is exactly that. Hogwarts. What's the academy the X-Men go to?
The Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters.
Yes, yeah. Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. And also the Ivy League schools follow the exact same pattern, which is we induct only a certain amount of people. It's just more, that's right out there in the open. But the process they're following, that system, they say is a system that is not invented by them, but they are mirroring the system of more invisible schools, which exist everywhere, that identify people at various ages.
Oh yeah.
Doctor Strange, same story, same thing.
The Magicians is a TV show that has a similar, like, you know, it's like an adult Hogwarts. It's like a college instead of for kids.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, that's it. And what's interesting about it is, like, the application process maybe to get into these schools is to find the school. So the application process is just to find the place. Once you find the school, you're in. And by the time you find the school, you've graduated. But that's the idea. And then when you so when you leave, you come into the world, you come back to the world with a different person, and you come back to the world with some bit of data that they have intentionally placed inside of you, because they've decided, oh yeah, now this is the, or this is the time, or we need it, or here is the, it's a form of info warfare, actually, where they're like, oh shit, things are out of balance, we need to make another Jesus. And so they grab somebody, fill him or her, or perhaps a technology, with the data, put that thing back into the world. The thing starts promulgating some new way of life, and that shifts the whole ecosystem of the human biosphere, which causes a renaissance to happen.
I like that. For myself, you know, I'm like, ooh, am I a sage? Am I doing the thing? Like, I at least see, like, a parallel in the ayahuasca ceremonies. Like, I'm definitely different now than I was, like, before I started doing it.
Well, that's why I wanted to mention it to you, because I was wondering if you knew that you had subscribed to this mystery school, and I was wondering if you realized that you're Ram, how much you realize that your Ram Dass is a plant that.
Oh yeah, I now, like, I didn't have, I, like, now that you're saying these things and asking this question, I'm like, yes, of course, like, I didn't have, like, the language, the vocabulary to describe it as such until now, but yeah, like, filling it in backwards, like, it retroactively makes complete sense that is what's happening. Like, I mean, I also, like, I know for sure, like, some of the stuff that I know is that I don't necessarily know anything for sure, but the stuff that I now believe, I believe strongly, and I'll, like, share it with anyone who wants it, you know, and anybody who also, like, you know, sort of comes to me through, like, my podcasts, my comedy, my talking to me, you know, just communicating in general, being in the world, like, I'm just, you know, I'm being away, I'm being the way that I am and that makes sense to be, and sharing the ideas that I have. And if people are like, nah, but what about, I'm like, well, then I guess, like, you're not, you know, everybody doesn't get the message, everybody doesn't listen, and I'm not even sure that I'm not positive that I have, you know, quote unquote, the answer, like, I can't, because that's part of it is, like, if anybody claims to know anything 100%, like, definitely, even, like, listening to Ram Dass talk about, you know, like, how, like, reincarnation exists, and like, there's certain things that I'm like, I don't know, you know, if everything that I'm saying is to even needs to be taken literally, or, you know, whether it's symbolically or whatever it is, like, because ultimately, like, the important thing, I think, is how you behave in this life as the body that you have, because that is the only thing that you can definitively, if you can know anything, it seems like you have control over your body and your actions, even if you don't have control over the thoughts in your head and the feelings that you're feeling. Like, you can be like, well, like, when you're too high on your edibles, you're like, well, I can clean and I can listen to this thing and I can, you know, try to make my body and mind, you know, align in the direction that I want them to. And that's all we can do is, you know, strive to head in the direction that we think is the right way to go based on the experiences that we've had.
But this data comes to you in a fascinating way, because, you know, it's like, okay, it's really very interesting to me what humans do. We normalize everything. So, like, I go to a human goes to an X-Men movie, let's say, and watches the superheroes. And the story is so cool, because it's like the kid is discovers that they have some power.
Oh yeah.
And once you, like, Spider-Man, it's like, it is every kid's dream to, like, find out that, or to get the bite of the spider, and then suddenly have the ability to do these things, and they kind of sloppily start doing good deeds, you know, or they're, like, not doing good deeds, but another X-Man will discover them and be like, okay, I know what you're up to because I used to be like that. And then they'll start teaching them, right?
Yeah, or in Spider-Man's case, he'll not do good things and then something bad will happen. And then he'll be like, oh, God, I should have been doing good things.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's all the origin story, you know. Yeah. But we watch that and we love it. It resonates with something in us. But we walk out of the movie theater and think, well, I'm never going to be able to have adamantium bones. I'm never going to be able to shoot webbing out of my hands. I'm never going to know Iron Man.
Yes.
Or whatever. And there can be a, or I'm never going to be a Jedi Knight. I'm never going to. And it's very funny because you will go back into your life. You forget about the movie, the fantasy, and you don't even realize that that movie is a reflection of an actual thing in the world, which is that you can be way, way more interesting than a superhero in the sense that, like, most superheroes, at least in the movies, not in like really great nuanced graphic novels, but in the movies a lot, and even good movies, sometimes good movies, the way they handle problems is generally a well choreographed fight scene.
Sure.
Violence, obstruction.
Oh, yeah.
And, tying someone up, killing them, whatever.
You could be much more of a hero than that.
Well, yeah, a more nuanced thing, and you can actually, and then you don't, and so what's very funny because a human, right, exactly, a human being can become that thing times a billion, and there's all these different ways to do it, but you in particular have been inducted into this academy that a lot of different people that I know have been inducted into.
Plant school.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're, and it's really, you know, Terrence McKenna used the term exopheromone. You heard of this before?
I don't think so, but sounds right.
So it's like, okay, what is a plant? It's nature. It's part of the body of life, and the, you know, a plant is like this amazing thing.
Now, oh, yeah.
When we talk of the sage, we talk of this being that, like, I don't care if you notice me. I'm just over here producing the oxygen you need to exist, plant, motherfucker.
The ultimate sage. There's a plant called sage.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Right? And so you know, these plants, you just drive down the street and you'd see these trees in New York. They're dormant now, but they're just starting to bud. They're all kinds of life is living in them. They produce. If they weren't there, the city would be a wasteland. And yet, obviously, the plants are not like, look how I'm tweeting. Look, it's, they're not taking, they can't. They're a whole other thing. We don't know what they are. But so an exopheromone.
Oh, yeah.
Is the, so the plant, though, is connected to a matrix of intelligence that is allowing life to exist on this planet. And so the plants communicate to each other, apparently, using exopheromones.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
And people think, oh, well, they just communicate with each other, I guess. Why would they want to communicate with us?
Oh, yeah.
And so ayahuasca, they say, or marijuana, or any plant medicine, is an exopheromone from what Terrence McKenna calls the vegetable mind that is trying to teach humans.
Oh, yeah.
So that it can influence the ecosystem that is out of balance.
One of the jokes that I have about ayahuasca slash truths that I have is whenever they ask, you know, people from South America who've been engaged in the practice of, you know, drinking ayahuasca, drinking this sacred tea plant situation, they would say, how did you know to do it? Like, because it's, you have to mix, you know, this vine with this leaf in a specific proportion, and it goes into your body and inhibits the inhibitors and then increases the DMT, and then you have the experience. But if you don't have the exact right proportions of the vine and the leaf, then you don't get that experience. So, like, how did you know? Like, how did you know to do it the first time you did it? And the answer they always give is, the plants told us to do it. And so the joke that I have is like, well, okay, so you were already doing it. So how did you know before that time? Like, because when you're, if you're doing it, like, it's funny, like, when people ask me, how did I know I wanted to do comedy? Or, like, when did I start wanting to do comedy? I was actually doing music before I was doing comedy. So I was playing music at a comedy club. And then in between songs, I would tell jokes. And I was like, oh, this is actually, I mean, I would just talk. And then people would laugh and be like, oh, this is interesting. This is a fun thing to do that isn't the music that I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
This comedy. So, like, I'm like, I knew I wanted to do comedy by doing comedy. Like, so, oh, I found out that I wanted to do comedy because I was doing comedy.
Yeah,
it's like,
right.
The way they, like, they find out that the plants want to teach them is because the plants were teaching them. And the question of how How did you have that first? How did you take that first drink or bite of plant? Like, well, I guess we just knew to do it because they were telling us to do it, and it's just, you know, this endless potential cycle. You know, turtles all the way down.
Turtles all the way down.
And not turtles, plants. But that is the thing that I was gonna. What is the other?
So
thing?
You're oh, yeah. Go no. Well, I mean, I'm just interested in this concept of like having a plant teacher, and I'm curious about. Specific, like, okay, so when I go to these Ram Dass retreats and yes. I run into my teachers there, they're like, hi, and I'll say hi, you know, and or whatever the game they're
yes,
whatever their system they're using to like teach me something, that system will continue. And even when I'm not around them, the system will continue.
Oh, yeah.
So with these plants, how do they say hello to you when you begin to the ceremony?
Great question. Before I answer that, I want to say this is going to be a quick, silly, jokey thing, but okay. That I just thought of when we were talking about the idea of a sage, like Jesus was a sage, let's say. And so I talked about, you know, so there's a plant called the sage, obviously, and there's parsley and rosemary and thyme. And so if we substitute Jesus in there, then you've got parsley, then you've got Jesus, rose, Mary, and thyme.
That's pretty cool.
So if only parsley could be Joseph in some way, but.
Oh yeah, there you go. I mean, and I do think there are probably analogous, like there are, I know, I mean, you know what that plant's called right there?
I don't.
A prayer plant.
Oh, that's, yeah, I mean, do you know, one of my favorite Ram Dass podcasts that I listened to had a story about him driving across country with a friend, and he's like, Ram Dass is like, I was driving, and I was like frustrated and like annoyed and like looking, I'm like, well, where do we have to go for the directions and do this and that? And like my friend was just like relaxed in the passenger seat, and every once in a while they'd pass a business or a sign on the road, and he would just say whatever it said, and it would be like, huh. Grand Union. Fly United. Merge. Like these things. And he's like, what do you? Oh. And like all these things around. It was funny. I was telling a buddy about this in LA at this vegan restaurant, actually, where they do a comedy show called Uncabaret. Have you done that show?
I have not done that. I know about that show, though.
So it's at a place called Olak, and it's like this all vegan menu. And I'm telling this friend about this cool story about, oh, you can just sort of like look anywhere and find these, you know, universal, like beautiful messages. And then I look down at the menu and I'm like, oh, on the alcohol list, it said organic spirits. So that was fun. But yeah, so the way that plants say hello, this specific plant that I've worked with for years now, like basically, you know, you in the ceremony, like the guide that I go to, he, you know, sort of like blows smoke in different directions, like for protection.
Is this the same guide for years that you've been going to?
Yes, I've only thus far got. I have like potential plans to try with some other friends in another place with another guide, but thus far it's only been with this one guide. And so yeah, I go to it's the same basic setup every time. I did it in Peru with him for a week, like five ceremonies in Peru last year, where there were slight differences because we were in a different place and it was, you know, a retreat specifically for that. And that was like all we were there for.
Yeah.
And so like the whole week itself was like one long ceremony. Like there's one portion of the ceremony where normally, like if I go, you know, I actually went this past weekend, like right after I texted you, and I went, you know, so the ceremony begins, like he'll ring chimes to signify the beginning, and then he'll guide the ceremony with these ikaros, these chants, these mantra-like songs. And by the end, like as he's closing, he'll right before the last song, he'll come around and do this sort of smoke blowing ritual.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's with oils, like he'll either like blow smoke on your head and on your back and into your hands, or he'll like put oils there and like blow. And it's like this very, you know, peaceful, like calming, like again, sort of like solidifying, like, ah, this is like now the ending of this communion. You know, we started,
wow.
We were finishing, like the effects come, the effects go. And
whoa.
as he's doing that, a joke that I have sometimes is like, I don't really smoke cigarettes and I don't really drink the alcohol that much. But like I say, I only smoke when I drink ayahuasca. I only have smoke blown into my hands when I drink this plant.
That's hilarious.
But the thing, oh yeah. So he comes around to each person individually usually, and then does this ceremonial ritual, and then when he finishes, then he starts the last song. But when we were in Peru, he didn't, of the first four nights we did it, he didn't do that smoke blowing at all. And then on the fifth night, there were only like maybe like 9 or 10 of us there, and instead of him coming around to us, like he invited each of us up one at a time, and then instead of just doing the ritual, which takes usually like, you know, a minute. He would sing one song completely like to us as we sat in front of us, like, you know, singing it to everybody, but like sort of like you're there receiving it, you know, the fullest force of it. And then he would do the smoke and the oil blowing. And it was this, you know, a beautiful, like, just like, oh, like the whole week we were like, oh, I guess he's not doing that. Oh, now he's doing like the most of it.
Wow.
And so, but to answer,
do you think he's doing like an abbreviated version when he's not there or something? Like what he's doing is just like, well, I'm doing like a mini version of what the classic way of doing it is.
I guess I don't fully know like the, you know, the quote unquote real way. It all seems real. It doesn't, you know, even now that I know the thing that I had in Peru, like I don't think when it's happening the other way here, the shorter version, I'm not like, I don't feel like I'm getting shortchanged. It's like,
hey, give me the long song, hey, shaman. Hey, do it. I want a 10-minute song.
Yeah, I had that thing once, and I know you got the good stuff. Like I'm ordering off menu,
like the Yelp reviews. He does the shorty caro. You know, the other shamans.
But
do they have a Yelp for shamans yet?
It's funny. I mean, an internal Yelp. So when it starts, you know, he goes around, you go up to him and receive, you drink out of a shot glass, usually some sort of, you know, little, it's a very small, you know, liquid dose that is, you know, usually powerful enough. Sometimes you get a second one, but often you don't need that. And the way that I feel it, you know, usually beginning to kick in, like, you know, sort of now it's different. It can be different every time. Like sometimes there's more visuals. Sometimes there's no visuals. Sometimes it's more mental. Sometimes it's more emotional. Sometimes it's more intellectual or spiritual feeling. It's like, so there's these different aspects of it, like the same way that, you know, if you have the same teacher in a class, like they might, you know, one day show a movie, one day go outside and teach, one day, you know, do things on the board, one day have, you know, just discussion sessions. And so there's all these different elements to it, possibly, like the way that a Twilight Zone episode might be, you know, you have the same, oh, it's the Twilight Zone, but it's like different characters in a different venue and different environment. But there is something, you know, uniting it all. You're like, oh, it's still the same. Like the color feels like purple to me, like when I close my eyes, and if it's visual, like sometimes things will start spiraling in a similar way. Sometimes it'll like, I don't know if when you do mushrooms, like sometimes it feels like mushrooms like grab my head from the back, you know, it sort of like curls up the back of my head, and like then it sort of has it. And with ayahuasca, sometimes like the strongest times, like it'll like start to do that, and it'll feel like, I read this story once when I was a kid, or I think it had it read to us like in school. And it was this kid was like, had his body taken over one body part at a time by like this presence. And it was like, it started possessing him, and he started trying to like choke himself with his own hand. It looked like from the outside. So they strapped him down. And eventually the end of the story, it's like, it went up through his face, and he went blind in one eye and deaf in one ear, and then completely. And then the presence overtook him. And then to the outside world, he was fine. He was like, oh, I'm good now. But really this thing had overtaken him, and that was like, it was like a scary story.
I know what you're talking about.
But now in this experience, it feels like that, but also like I don't disappear, but I am like taken. Like it fills me with this, you know, sort of otherworldly, or, you know, this worldly presence, like the most worldly, this universal presence that like fills me. And I'm like, oh, now I am like, you know, even more acutely aware of the everything that I always have been a part of, you know, getting into the deepest part of myself, or like the most, the farthest stretched part of the universe. Cause it all is, you know, you're sort of just an avatar of everything. You're like, oh, I'm going to play as this body for a little while.
Yes.
And it, so it just sort of like highlights, and so both makes me like sort of sometimes dissociate and forget. Like I have friends who have done it, and like they like have names and words in their head of people that they know, including their own name. And they're like, I know those are important, but I don't know what they refer to while this is happening. And so it always, you know, it feels like when I call it like before it's actually fully kicked in, like, but you're like, oh, it's starting. Like I see the spirals, but I am still quote unquote me, or like I feel the feeling, I feel it creeping through me, but I am still me. That I feel it, call those like the pre-epiphanies. And I'm just like, oh, is this it? Is this it? And then eventually, you know, when you're asking, is this it? It's not it. And then eventually you're like, oh, yeah, I don't have to ask anymore. Yeah. And then you're there. And like, I remember the next day I was meditating, and I was like, I don't even really need to be meditating, because my brain was still full of the meditative, like, if you meditate and you feel like you are going into a different headspace, like, then that is kind of like, that's part of it. That's part of what it feels like. So it's sort of like the hello is like, you know, welcome back to your brain feeling like this, to your body, like being in this slightly if not elevated, just this slightly shifted presence, this shifted feeling of like, oh, here's this. And like, it's not even about like the visuals are just sort of like a framework upon which, you know, the thoughts and feelings and emotions are like, you know, sort of painted. And they're cool. It's like, oh, wow. You know, like, I mean, some people might be going into to be like, oh, cool party, you know, like, let's go snort ayahuasca off a shaman's tits. But that's not, for most people that are doing it, most students who are regularly attending the plant school and getting invited back are, you know, people who are like, oh, yeah, the work. I mean, I have no idea the actual experience that anybody else is having.
Can we try something?
Sure.
Okay, now I know you just said it's not all about the visuals, and I know exactly what this is DMT. Like when you smoke DMT, it's just, you realize, oh, fireworks show, awesome. Yeah. That's not what's there's something else happening.
Yes.
But because this is what we have in our ability to articulate and experience, and then we don't have the words maybe to talk about some of the other parts of it.
Sure.
Or we would have to make up the words.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to close my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I want you to like describe to me,
okay,
what that moment is, where it goes from being the pre-epiphany to the epiphany.
Sure.
And describe it as in as detailed a way as you can, with colors and everything, just so that
I'll do what I can.
I can feel it. Maybe people listening can kind of get a virtual
sure.
First 5 minutes of the DMT.
Oh yeah.
Taking us.
And this will be like sort of an amalgamation of different times that I've had the experience.
I'm going to sit back.
Okay. So your eyes are closed. You've drunk this plant, you know, maybe 30, 40, 50, 60 minutes ago. You've been thinking about your life and, you know, people in your life that you care about, maybe mistakes that you've made that you want to not remake, you know, people that you've hurt, things that you've done to hurt yourself, ways that you, you know, want to plan to wish to be better. And now, like, your stomach is kind of shaky and nervous because you've had this powerful thing put into it, the first thing. You've been fasting for hours, and so your body is maybe shaking a little bit. You feel like you might throw up. Maybe you do throw up, but you feel it. You taste it come back up in your throat, and then you see, with your eyes closed, in front of your eyes, sort of, like, spinning around kind of gears, things that look like little, sort of Lucky Charm-like, you know, inspired, just different sort of hieroglyphs or different sort of just, you know, not from any particular culture, but sort of like universal, just spinning, you can't even tell what is spinning, but there's like the blackness is spinning, but now it seems to be imbued with some colors, like a dark purple rainbow all the colors are there, but there's also, it's just in darkness, so it's like this dark rainbow swirling around, getting bigger and bigger, and then it's sort of like if you've seen Star Trek go into hyperspace, you see like, you know, stars start to appear and start to lengthen and then zoom past your face, and you're also, your face is doing the zooming, and those lines are basically grabbing your brain, grabbing your mind, your consciousness, and then you feel like your face getting like kind of almost falling asleep, but more the opposite, more like your face is waking up fully, and it's not your face, it's everything, it's your brain. You're like, and then zooming, and it feels like it's getting deeper and deeper, and you're like, it's a ride that you wish that you could get off in a way, but also you are the ride, and you don't wish, and you can't, and that doesn't do anything, and you're just moving at like hyperspeed, and then you are this hyperspace, and you're moving, and your heart is getting faster, and your stomach, it is like you are a roller coaster, and then you're just spiraling through infinity, and eventually you punch through to this other side that you didn't even know was there, and then you're in this sort of calm sea where your brain is now, maybe you are still moving, but because you were moving so fast before, you're moving, at least it seems slower, it seems like you've stopped, and you're in this sort of, not a swamp, but just like this, you know, ethereal murk, this just, you're there, and you kind of look around more, your eyes are still closed, if you open them, you're back in the room that you were, but you close them, and maybe you can smell things stronger now, there might be like this sort of like rose watery smell, or there's a specific oil that it's hard to describe. We don't have enough enough words for smells, but it smells good and sweet, and it looks, again, like sort of colorful. Like, I think there's now it's less dark purple and more like rose red tinted, and you're sort of like both rising, you're in your body, but you're also rising above it and witnessing your body being sort of filled with light, and just you are, you know, both lighter in weight and lighter in color, and just then you're there.
Wow, that sounds like the coolest thing on earth.
It's pretty cool. On or off?
Oh, wow, man. I can almost feel it. It's like a familiar thing. You're describing something familiar, maybe from mushrooms or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Anyway, so the third thing I wanted to say was...
Oh, yeah.
It actually is relevant to this as well. I forget if I've told you this. The guide that I go to is hilarious. Like, this is the reason I thought of this now, and I'm not... Tell me if I've told you this before, but I'm sure there are people listening that haven't heard it. But this is the funniest thing that I've ever experienced, like, during an ayahuasca day because of this man who, like, one of the first times that I did it, literally the first time, he said to me, you know, beforehand, he was like, have you done this? And I said, no. And he says, have you done mushrooms? And I said, yes. And he said, good, good, good. It's very different. And that was, like, funny to me. And I was like, oh, this man said a thing, and he didn't even know it was funny. But then I later would realize, like, oh, this man knows exactly, like, he's in a language, like, you know, English is not his first language. He has a heavy accent.
Yeah.
It's really enjoyable to listen to him speak. But he's also, he's funny in another language. Like, so, I mean, I want to learn Spanish just to learn how funny he actually can be. But here's the funniest thing. It was... about 2 years ago, I think. So the very first time I did it was like fall of 2014. So this must have been like February 2015. It was Super Bowl weekend. I did a ceremony Saturday night right before the Super Bowl and Sunday night of the Super Bowl. It was really funny. There was tons of people there on the Saturday night, not as many people there during the Super Bowl, which is like, oh yeah, we want to come on a Saturday night, have this peaceful experience so that on Sunday we can watch the most violent thing in the world, I guess. And so on Saturday night...
That's hilarious.
After the ceremony ends, when the ceremony ends, he finishes the final song, rings the same bells, the same tones that he rang to begin it, and then he always says a version of something like this. He says, well, dear sisters, brothers, we are in the finish of our ceremony for tonight. One more time, I'd like to say thanks to Mother Ayahuasca for she gives teachings and medicine. Like always, I'd like to say thanks to Mother Earth, for she gives food, home, path, and work. And one more time, I'd like to say thanks to our creator of the heaven and the earth, in the freedom way, for they are our true master. Thank you for being here, everyone, and making possible this meeting with ayahuasca like a meditation. Thank you. And so he always says that, and this on this one particular night, he went through that, and he finished it. It's sort of like saying grace after the meal.
Yeah.
And then immediately from what seemed to be like his phone or like a nearby device, music started playing. And we're like, normally, you know, you have your phones off, nothing's happening. And it's crazy. Like, if you know, every once in a while, like somebody's phone does go off in a thing. You're like, ooh, that's, you know, sort of out of place. So it felt very out of place. But then the music that was playing from his phone right after he finished the thank you was a... That's all, folks. And it was on purpose. We were like, oh God, an accidental. Oh my God, that is. And it was, I was like, I'm a comedian and I have no idea how you just did the funny, like the room cracked up. It was the funny, like it was the most solemn, sacred moment of, you know, of this experience. We all just came through this thing. And then, you know, he knows where we all were. And, you know, some people might have had, like, difficult times, but this just thing, this, you know, the same way that, like, comedy can cathartically unite, you know, in times of trouble, be like, oh, my God, like, Mother Mary made a joke, you know, just...
Wow. What is the word? There's a word for that, that thing, the underlying, God, that smile, there's a word for it. The way that, like, behind the... Anyway, he sounds like an amazing human.
Oh yeah, and the reason I thought of that was because that I was reminded of that by Ram Dass's head coming out of the water and
right
sticking his tongue out.
Ah,
yeah,
And I'm not going anywhere.
The most solemn, yeah, person, you know, doing like the least solemn seeming thing. But also, you know, that, you know, sort of laughter and seriousness are like flip sides.
The great teachers are very, very funny. All of them, hands down. Every single teacher I've ever met, they're hilarious at just the right moment. And they're using it. Everything that they do is just another form of healing. And it's just for some reason with comedy, when it's done in just the right way.
Oh yeah.
As a teaching in its own right, it's always mind blowing.
There's one other time I was seated next to him. So like he's, you know, it's usually like a big semicircle or a circle sort of around him. And he's in a chair, and then he has usually like helpers on like either side of him, and one or like people that he, you know, knows and wants there. And so one time I was seated to his right.
Cool.
And it was sort of like an honor. Yeah. And I was like, this is really cool. And after one of his songs ended, he like turns to me and he whispers, he says, and like, usually there's like no talking. I mean, he can talk, he can do whatever he wants, but it's a quiet thing for people to be inside themselves and not be distracted yeah. by other people doing and saying things or moving around. But he whispers to me, he says, "Do you know why it's good to sit on my right?" And I was like, I wish I knew I don't know if there's like a right answer. I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, and he just says it again. He's like, "Do you know why it's good to sit on my right?" And I was like, I'm like, am I supposed to know? I don't actually know. He's like, and he says it like three or four times. He's like, "Do you know why it's good to sit on my right?" And I was like, "I don't." And he says, "So I can do this." And he just like shoves me.
Wow. He sounds so cool.
Oh yeah.
Want to meet him.
He's wonderful. Here's one other, just a thing, the way that he speaks, like, is, you know, not broken English, but like a very specific, like, you know, if you looked at it on paper, you'd be like, that's not a correct sentence, but he uses the same, he rules and guidelines to speak. One time he was telling us that he had seen a movie recently and he doesn't usually see movies. And we're like, "Oh, what movie did you see?" It was like about people on a mountain, climbing a mountain, doing a specific natural thing. He's like, "This is the kind of movie that I will see." And then he says, "I do not will go see Batman."
Well, maybe he should.
Oh yeah, no, definitely the same. He says sometimes, you know, that he doesn't claim to be, you know, a guru, a shaman.
Sure.
Like, he's like, "I am, you know, a man who has worked with plants. Like, I've learned about yeah. these plants and been working with plants for several decades." And
the people who seem the most authentic in this path are they're more like doctors or something, or they don't like,
or scientists, yeah. or just, you know, practitioners, like yeah. people who care and learn and are, you know, like, he's like, I have a very specific set of skills. And like, if anything has been taken from you, then I'll help you get it back. Wow.
That's funny.
I forget what I was going to say. Oh yeah. The point is, he says sometimes that, you know, it's called a sacred plant. It's called, but he says sometimes, like, I don't like to call, you know, it's sacred, but also anything can be sacred. Every plant can be sacred. Everything, every person, every place can be if you give something meaning, then so yeah, if he wanted to go see Batman, Batman could be a sacred movie.
Thank you so much for this, man.
Oh, thank you.
I feel like I'm at the end of some ceremony now, and I'm very grateful to you. Thanks a lot,
oh,
man.
Thank
this
you,
is
Duncan.
A really wonderful conversation.
Always a pleasure.
Again, we'll do it again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Mike Kaplan. You can check him out at mikekaplan.com. Hare Krishna to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. Go to squarespace.com. Use offer code Duncan to get 10% off a brand new website. Start your free trial today. Don't forget to use our Amazon link. And if you like this podcast, subscribe to us. Give us a nice rating on iTunes. Love yourself. Dive into the purple light. Be kind to each other. Remember the science fiction story and what that character used to treat this terrible malady. And think about it for yourself. I will see you next week. We have a beautiful podcast coming up with Emil Amos and many more on the way. I love you guys so much, and I'll see you soon.